morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Donald Trump's determination to abolish constitutional governance is patently visible in his attempt to avoid prison and virtually decimate the White House in order to construct a ballroom for America's wealthy ruling classes to dance the tyranny waltz. I think of American politics as a party of the rich, which seeks to ruin once and for all the party of the commons. Trump represents the vile dictatorial aspirations of the rich Tories, our revolutionary ancestors disputed, but unfortunately have not completely eradicated with their long-ago revolution for freedom, independence, and the cockeyed democracy that has so far resulted from their overthrow of monarchical domination. Now, something I wrote for a program at about this time of year a few years back, but I think it might still remain relevant to repeat. A short history of the millennium. A very few of humanity's billions will ever be remembered for very long or be recorded for more than village histories. And the names who momentarily preoccupy our era will as surely vanish. Of our rapidly fluid epoch, which encompasses parts of two millennia, perhaps only Hitler and Gandhi might remain long in the future as icons of our dark and light, and Einstein, who asked two compelling questions that altered our cosmology. Where am I? How am I moving? All the rest is E equals MC squared. Only recently have women's claims to history been taken seriously, and in Western society, it is difficult to entertain any other than a Caucasian cosmology. The epic human struggle is usually portrayed as East against West, of yellow peril against white is right, of crescent against cross, and both against Judaism. Black and white are absolutely incompatible. The only real significance of the eternal conflicts is the epic flow of blood, the slaughter at each turn of history's pages, for reasons as brief as their lives. The names of the multitudes are lost. Only the numbers are marked, aggregates of immense folly and depravity. Man is born, suffers, and dies, quote unquote, is the legendary crystallization of Egypt's long ancient history and might elliptically be the essential history of humanity. The German Count Gottlieb von Hassler enlarged the thought toward the end of the 19th century when he said, unconsciously anticipating the world wars of the 20th century, it is necessary that our civilization build its temple on a mountain of corpses, on an ocean of tears, and on the death cries of men, and he left out women, without number, quote unquote. A major significant fact about this transmillennia epoch is its mountains of corpses, quote unquote, laid out at civilization's temple as the purpose or outcome of its greatest scientific and technological creations. At the very heart of the temple are the death camps of World War II, which names Auschwitz, Treblinka, Dachau will very likely reverberate with a shudder up through the centuries. Simultaneously, the purpose of splitting the atom to obliterate large numbers of the human species might cause future humanity, however bountiful nuclear energy, to regard its second millennium progenitors as at least as barbaric we regard our cave-dwelling forebearers. A paradox that underlies history is that the eras of greatest creativity and discovery are also the most dangerous. The 8 decades since World War II are unparalleled in advances of knowledge and productivity compared to the entirety of the previous 10 millennia, and human culture has consequently structured technologies that are disintegrating civilization, even as contemporary civilized life owes its existence to them. Science is the most obviously the Pied Piper this era dances to. Science and its handmaiden technology modernize civilization by routinely ripping away its fabric without making much effort to repair it in a kaleidoscopic surge into an incomprehensible future. This is the point at which history is declared dead, without significant meaning or impact, except as memory and latent nostalgia, because it is claimed to no longer have any bearing or effect on present or future. The race is to the swift who disregard consequences. The present is patently obsolete as it careens into the future. Although human progress is typically measured through technical prowess and achievement, it should at least be as important to concentrate on the contradictory evolution of human rights and freedoms and the painfully slow development toward a world civilization free of despotism and tyranny. Like it or not, humanity is a global species, overcrowding into every accommodatable space on the planet. Humanity eternally pushes at the edge of evolution, impatiently and recklessly remaking the natural world into its own image, meanwhile overturning nature as well. Perhaps the major consistency in our history is our disdain for our only natural enemy. The natural world in which we have spent the great majority of our history, though it is mostly unrecorded, is regarded as an adversary to be overcome and altered to our design, whether domesticating grains and animals to cloning them and ourselves. The reality of attaining an equitable world civilization will obviously be much more rough and tumble than is generally the vision, given the dyspepsia of our ill-tempered species. Yet the rising tectonic turbulence by impoverished, overcrowded, and cruelly governed masses of humanity is a basic struggle for a decent life on this planet. This most ancient desire to be a part of a community, not enslaved by it, might very well readjust the center of power. Universal amalgamation might provide the basis for human diaspora beyond a home planet that is rapidly changing into a hostile world. The fact that we have already started the process of making Earth unlivable for our species and others, there is yet a near future of many more generations who will be forced to live on a dying world bequeathed by callously reckless predecessors. By abandoning our heirs so that the present dwellers of Mother Earth can live in comfort might be a just rationale for nuclear extinction. More placid possibilities than self-ruin are that we reconfigure our DNA with electrical impulsation into the human neural system, a robotization that has been hailed as humanity's next great evolution, the bionic transformation out of biology. A way might be found to keep the world's masses of poor people alive and healthy in exchange for body parts and internal organs for rich folk. Herds of healthy poor can be kept available for harvest in a future dystopian collapse. Male humans might become extinct as a result of biological and reproductive irrelevancy. The cold reality is that women can survive as the lone gender and continue to perpetuate the species, female, as well as the busy work necessary for survival of anthropological disaster. Nuclear weapons rendered the nation state dead as dinosaurs, despite recurrent regressive xenophobic rise of nationalist sentiment, such as the atavistic Make America Great Again, convulsing United States politics. A world civilization encompasses billions of human beings, leaving out a trillion other living organisms, several of which humanity has more rapidly made extinct or endangered the past 100 years than at any time earlier. But everything has accelerated, as well as the human birth rate and population sprawl that seems to have no end in sight. More babies are born every day than dead left to make room for them. And that despite daily baby mortality worldwide from hunger, poor medicine, and incessant warfare, humanity overflows Earth like maggots on a peach. The human fabric is interwoven from billions of diverse threads that dissolve into everybody moving around at random, with no apparent distinguishable themes as they bump into each other. Just billions of ordinary persons doing individually what they wish or feel obliged to do without patterns large enough to frame, swarming like protozoa in a drop of water. The sum total of human works does not equal in all parts put together the achievements of the life forms of plant and insect in a square foot of grass, the writer Philip Wiley said in 1968. The true millennium this era ordains really started in the middle of the 20th century when humanity cracked the atom. It was also a moment when human beings realized this cosmic power they unleashed from its lock might be the doom of humanity. It was one of those rare moments that seemed as if everything before that moment was inexorably directed toward it, and afterward will be measured from it. Quite like it will be with us on the Pacific coast when the Cascadia earthquake and tsunami rupture our lives sooner than later. Humanity's sly calculation of time might not fit any other world than its own, and even so is a compromise between observation and superstition. This beginning of an early year of the third millennium, actually after its first quarter of a century of a parochial calendar, might be an opportunity to reassess a few perceptions of human reign over our very small, fragile, crowded planet. It really makes little sense to fear the future. After all, it is where we will spend the rest of our lives. Every moment is new, like waves from an immense ocean, each second an uncertainty unexplored and doubtful, and as instantly history, irretrievable, except in memory and myth. And Samuel Beckett, you must go on. I can't go on. I will go on. It is the great mass of ordinary people who will and must prevent world suicide. It must be done by everyone, beginning with each one. Each of us will die, either privately or as part of the extinction of the species, if we do not arrest the dangers of nuclear violence. There are good reasons we must each die. Primary among them to make room and leave a few resources for our descendants. What is different now is that we must step outside our small fears and immediate prejudices and ensure a world for our inheritors. There has never been a more personal or more universal struggle in our history. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. Today is Thursday. In Norse mythology, it is Thor's day. Thor, the hammer, all god Odin or Wotan's son, whose day is Wotan's day, aka Wednesday. Tuesday and Friday are essentially Wotan's or Odin's wives. Of course, we all know the other days of the week are named after planet Saturn, followed by Allfather Sol for Sunday and the Moon Day. Why not 7 or 8 days or even 9 or 10 to complete the local cosmology of this particular infinitesimal alignment of planets? Only because, I might guess, because the smaller planets were hard to see in ancient days. Yet, that doesn't quite grok.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.